they're willing to allow Israel and the United States, or both, or either of them, to breach over the Muslim world to cleanse Iran from their ability to carry out nuclear power. It's interesting that in the midst of all of this, Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah is going to visit Barack Obama here in the United States tomorrow. Then, next week, on July 6th, Benjamin Netanyahu will be visiting the President of the United States. It would appear that all of these things are in a final planning stage for a preemptive attack on Iran. Even Senator John Kerry, liberal though he be, chairman of the powerful Senate Foreign Relations Committee, visited the liberal President Shimon Peres in Jerusalem on Sunday and said Iran has not left anybody very much choice but to move down the road that we're going. No one in the United States, he said, underestimates or mistakes the challenges that Iran is posing to the region. The senator's visit is viewed as a warm-up for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's upcoming visit to the White House next month, 1 week after King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia travels to Washington, and I believe he's already there. In the midst of all of this, the Israeli Defense Force has drawn up a new Gaza war doctrine ahead of potential new conflict with Hamas in the Gaza Strip. The IDF has drawn up plans to evacuate entire Palestinian villages and refugee camps from areas of conflict in the event of an Israeli incursion into Gaza. Now, they believe that they may very well have to go into Gaza if they go into Iran, because Hamas and Hezbollah in the north of Israel are largely connected in meaningful ways with Iran. And so they may have to fight not only Iran, but Gaza on the south and Hezbollah on the north. So to avoid the accusations that came with Operation Cast Lead from a year or two ago, they're talking about even removing whole villages of innocent civilians in order to defend themselves against the Hamas in Gaza. So we see a much bigger picture. Now let me make this brief comment before we wrap up. What we see is the U.S. and Israel perhaps positioning themselves for a preemptive attack on Iran. However, and I'm not saying, I don't have a thus saith the Lord on this, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's interesting, nobody seems to be considering the fact that Iran and or Russia, see, Iran is somewhat of a client of Russia, could make a preemptive attack upon the United States and or Israel. The implications of that would be nothing short of unbelievable, historic, and horrendous, and usher in the fulfillment of Ezekiel 38 and 39. In any event, the nations that are involved here, I believe, ultimately will lead to the fulfillment of the prophecies of Ezekiel 38 and 39. You might want to go back and read it. Get a copy of As America's Done to Israel. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA and become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 22255, and pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Jeff Kosmeyer. Your brief is a...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Lee Penn. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects. Now, ordinarily we have open lines on Wednesday evening, but we had a catastrophe as far as our phone system, 15 years old, very complicated, and it went down about 2 days ago. We're working with a makeshift system. We'll have hopefully our system up working either Friday or Monday, but in the meantime, we're not taking any calls, but this will be a fascinating program without calls, because Lee has done a magnificent job of writing about population control. Now, to most people, population control, what are they talking about, abortion? And no, we're talking about an organized effort to remove a large part of the population of the world, and there really are people out there who have a different worldview. In fact, when I was involved for many years, for about a decade, in the effort to try to use an effective public health approach to the AIDS epidemic here in the United States and save human lives. We've lost well over almost 600,000 people so far, another million and a half infected. We don't know how many infected, because we're not doing any of the logical things to stop the spread of the disease: premarital testing, routine testing, prenatal testing, postnatal testing, all the things that should be done to stop the spread of a sexually transmitted disease. We're not doing it. And for years I just thought, gee, that's the craziest thing in the world, until somebody one time just said, this is all about population control. And it really is. I mean, people are dying like flies in Africa, and because this disease has a predilection for blacks. And what a horrible realization it was, that there really are people who do not want to stop a plague that's already killed tens of millions of people and will kill hundreds of millions probably before it's over. Well, with that as the background, let's get to Lee Penn. Hi, Lee. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing just fine. How did you get interested in the subject of population control?
I've been aware of the agenda of the population controllers for many years, and actually one of the reasons that I became Catholic in the mid-1990s was the pro-abortion and pro-population control stance of the leadership of the Episcopal Church.
Well, I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time actually with Father Marx with the Population Research Institute and Stephen Mosier, and worked very closely with them. And if I hadn't been a dedicated Protestant, why, I think Father Marx would have converted me to Catholicism. Wonderful, wonderful individual, and at least the Catholic Church has taken, many of the members have taken a very, very proper stand as far as abortion and as far as euthanasia. But they recognize that this is far more than abortion and euthanasia. It also involves the use of other techniques, terrible and vicious techniques, to kill off really millions of people. And they really have. They've accomplished it, and it's going on today, and I fear that countless millions more are going to die. But you go right ahead with your thoughts.
The population control movement has a long history. It goes back at least to the last quarter of the 19th century with the Fabian Socialists and with the Theosophists, and soon thereafter with Marxian Socialists and Liberal Christians joining the chorus, and then after World War II, ecologists and population biologists began to speak along the same lines. And it is driven by ideology and worldview and a belief that there are certain people who are surplus and should not be allowed to reproduce. That's what it comes down to.
Well, those sort of the idea of the useless eaters, those who are not really a benefit to society, well, wouldn't why keep people alive when they're really not being productive? We'll be back in just a few moments with Lee Penn. And, of course, it really is a genocidal agenda. Lee, go right ahead.
Okay. The The population controllers have had this worldview in place long before the world population itself began to accelerate during the period after World War II, and long before world population reached its current level of some 6.8 billion people. As far back as the 1870s and 1880s, when the population was only a billion and a quarter people, there was already agitation for population control, and it's already true back then, more than a century ago, that early birth control agitators like Annie Besant were blaming famines in India and China on overpopulation in those countries. So the dread of the fecundity of the third world populations goes back for more than a century. And since World War II, especially with the activity of the United Nations and with the activity of non-governmental organizations and private foundations funded by the richest people on the planet, there's been aggressive worldwide attempts to limit the population growth in the third world, and of course very aggressive and largely successful attempts to move toward population stabilization and population shrinkage in the developed world too.
Why is it that people of great wealth are so dedicated to this idea of population control and eliminating large parts of the world population?
It may simply be that they are so elitist that they don't see the value of their fellow human beings unless they are people who are somewhat like themselves. And they might just look out at the general population, and instead of seeing people who are made in the image of God or people who are poor and may need assistance in order to rise up, they just see a surplus, undifferentiated mass of eaters. It's hard to get into their mindset because I'm nowhere near that, but it's grim and sobering to realize that you have the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Bill Gates, and
Turner and the foundation
supporting the same stuff.
Right, and don't forget Ted Turner, and don't forget George Soros and some of the others, multi-billionaires, seem to be so concerned about all the people in the world. There's just too many of them, and the world would be far better off without them. In fact, they've even formed a doomsday seed bank up there above the Arctic Circle, the Rockefellers and Bill Gates, so they'll have seeds to use when they start all over again. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Lee Penn, and he simply was mentioning the background of this movement beginning in the latter part of the 19th century, and certainly then, of course, extending into the 20th century, and this idea that there were certainly the world might be better off without so many people. And he mentioned the fact that many of the major tax-exempt foundations are involved. He mentioned specifically the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation, and I believe you mentioned Bill Gates there. Bill Gates was very, very concerned about just too many people in the world, and I asked him why these people of great wealth were so interested in limiting the number of people in the world, and Lee said he couldn't get into their minds. Maybe they just didn't understand, you know, that each one individual is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. I just sort of suspect they don't have much use for God. They don't believe God works in the affairs of men, and they don't believe that God really directs what happens in the world, and God's not going to let there be too many people in the world. Anyway, go right ahead.
I think that's what it comes down to, is that in order to do what they have done to gain and keep the kind of wealth they have done, that a lot of these people have had to trample on the moral laws and to act as if there is no God. So their worldview is godless and materialistic, and they have a low put a low value on human life for that reason.
Well, I think that basically it's all a matter of your worldview. Either you believe there's a God and God rules the affairs of men, or you believe there is no God, and then you need people of great wealth and intelligence and the elite to determine the course of humanity. And that seems to be really what's going on today, because, of course, they have a program, basically. They keep telling you there are too many people in the world, but the fertility rate continues to drop. The sperm count in men continues to drop all throughout the world. And probably within about 10, 15 years, the population of the world will peak out about a little over 8 billion and then begin to fall and may not stop falling. Go right ahead.
You've got the population projection correct. And that is assuming that there's no upheaval between now and then, such as a major war or a general economic breakdown or something else that would cause large-scale chaos and massive death.
Well, I personally believe there is going to be that widespread chaos and massive death that you're speaking of. I believe we're heading into a terrible, horrible, and bloody war. But I'm just giving you the figures that are put out by the people who've really studied population growth, and they're firmly convinced that once the world population starts to drop, once you've got families out of the habit of having children, once you've made it so difficult for people to have children and so expensive to send them to college, why, pretty soon the population will drop, and this is, it has in Europe, certainly. Oh, and you know the figures over there in Europe as well as I do, but Europe is not reproducing its population. If it weren't for the Muslims coming in, why, there'd be hardly any children being born. But you go right ahead, Lee, because I want to get your ideas out. I thought you did such a great job in that article that you wrote.
Well, you're right about the decline in the population in Europe, and I think that it's even the case that Europeanized Muslims, those who have been in Europe for more than 50 or 60 years, are themselves reducing their birth rates. So the circumstances of life and the prevailing worldview in the industrialized countries are leading people to stop reproducing. And there is, so far there isn't any sign that any kind of pronatalist policy or any kind of subsidies or such could turn that trend around. So that once the same kind of worldview and once the same economic constraints are in place worldwide, population will begin to drop and then keep dropping. And to reiterate, the UN itself is projecting a peak in world population somewhere between 2025 and 2050 and a decline thereafter. And it's such a contrast to the late 60s and 1970s when population growth was accelerating and when the environmental activists were talking about relentless and permanent and ever-accelerating population growth. They were simply extrapolating a short-term trend without looking at the longer-term reality.
Well, I think that people must understand that in places like France, where the fertility rate is about 1.4 children per family, and it takes 2.1 children to reproduce population, in France they're paying families to have children, and they're not having them.
Yes,
same thing is going on in Japan, and certainly
Japan, Italy, Eastern Europe, same story. Russia.
We go right ahead. So basically, Chris, it is really more of a philosophy that has motivated these people to go out of their way to actually promote population control.
And, what it comes down to is godlessness. And godlessness can either be straight-up materialist militant atheism, or godlessness can be the worship of a false god, such as Gaia, or the earth. And most of the proponents of the earth as mother goddess don't seem to realize or don't fully understand that the last thing that quote goddess will do for them is to kill them, and that ultimately Mother Gaia herself, James Lovelock, a proponent of this theory, at least recognizes that Gaia is already getting old and is going to die when the sun heats up too much.
Well, of course, you know, it is my personal belief that a reduction in population is not certainly all about the propaganda that's put out. I think there's things that have been done to decrease the population. Why would the sperm count fall all throughout the world, not just here in the United States, but all throughout the world? And why are we having so many fertility clinics? We never saw these in years past, of women who can't conceive and have children. I mean, is there something that they are perhaps doing, actively doing, to decrease fertility and decrease reproduction?
I don't know about active measures being taken on a mass scale now to decrease fertility. But on the other hand, what we are doing several things that are unprecedented. One is that mass use of contraception has meant that people are excreting excess hormones from these contraceptives into the water, and those hormones go into the drinking water for the rest of us, so that whether we want to use contraceptives or not, everybody is on them, in a sense.
Well, it's even more than that, certainly, the use of aspartame and MSG actually, of course, decreases fertility. The bisphenol, which is in all of our bisphenols, it lines all of our cans. They've known since the 1930, it alters the estrogen content, and certainly it raises the estrogen in men, and, of course, it tends to feminize them. And the same thing with phthalates. They know very well that the mercury in the vaccines attacks the reproductive system. They know very well that the fluoride in the water attacks the reproductive system, and you can check these communities where they have fluoride in the water, the comparable communities, and there's about a 50% reduction in the sperm count. They know exactly what they're doing. I mean, they're actively encouraging homosexuality. Why? Because homosexuals don't reproduce. But the homosexual doesn't realize he's simply being utilized in this whole thing. In fact, the bisphenols, they line all of our cans. We buy anything out of a can. And very often these children, when they're infants, you know, when they're eating baby food, or they're getting milk out of a baby bottle. And, of course, there's bisphenol in that plastic. And, of course, that when you warm it up, it comes out, and then this little boy maybe is getting all sorts of estrogens, and you can't help but wonder if this begins to alter their sexual outlook. I believe that there is an active program, and we've looked at this, but nobody ever talks about this sort of thing.
Evidence that soy leads to increased estrogen or feminization?
You're absolutely right. It really does.
And that's been promoted very heavily since the 1980s, at least, as a health food.
And it does really, it actually will tend to feminize the men, because we're eating so much, and we have the soy milk, and we have the soy meal, and the soy is in so many things, and personally I don't think it's good for you at all, especially now that it's been genetically modified. And the other thing is the genetically modified food. It's amazing when you analyze what happens with the genetically modified food with animals. They become infertile. Nobody's ever studied in human beings, but we do notice how many men have sexual dysfunction, how many women can't conceive, and we know that happens in animals. Why would then they feed this food, which is so toxic to animals, to human beings, and not even here in the United States allow us to know that it's genetically modified? In Europe, they won't allow it. In most countries, they won't allow it. I mean, most of our, certainly our soy, most of our canola, cottonseed, corn, the rice now, it's all genetically modified, and it has a definite effect on reproduction. But nobody ever mentions this in the radio control media.
A question about the soy hypothesis. Soy had, tofu and soy products have been a part of the Asian diet for a long time, and at least until very, very recently in Japan, but certainly still in China and India, their populations are growing up, and they eat soy, do they not, in larger quantities than we usually have in the West?
No, they're very small amounts. I mean, the tofu and the other things that they eat, they're fermented, first of all. And then they eat not in large quantities. No, we have this, you know, we put this in as artificial meats, artificial hamburgers, and certainly in milk. No, the Asians can get by because theirs is fermented for a year or two. Most of the things that they have are fermented soy, which changes its chemical makeup. But here in America, it's become already a major source of diet. We have books and four tape sets on this, and I'll tell you, a lot of animals are a lot smarter than people. They won't eat soy products.
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment here, and welcome. I was about to say we'd welcome people's calls, but I suddenly realized we don't have the ability to take calls at this time, so you go right ahead. We're just going to have to carry on our conversation for the full hour, but I'm sure we won't have any
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Government, because the Catholic Church now has embraced globalism. And of course, with this idea of a one world government comes the idea of a one world church. The two of them go together like Ben and Jerry. Well, it's or Amos and Andy. And unfortunately, just about as humorous. But let's get back. Lee was simply talking about Paul Ehrlich. Paul Ehrlich's a professor who wrote a book called The Population Bomb some years ago. We were just going to have too many people in the world, and his solution was, well, we have to limit consumption. We have to have people in the world stop using things. They've got to stop using cars. They've got to stop using detergents. They've got to stop using refrigeration. Maybe they can have one refrigerator for a family. Certainly no more than one television set per family, because I wouldn't disagree with that, because television, I think, is a great curse. I remember living in South Africa without television, and what a wonderful thing it was. And then television came in, and we came back to the United States. It was getting to be increasingly like the United States at that time. But certainly there is this effort going along with this whole idea of population control, of globalism, and apparently Paul Ehrlich is a globalist. He believes we need a world government. And certainly, and what we need is world regulation. We need an elite in key powers, positions of power, to regulate the common people so we can have a sustainable future. Because if we don't have more regulation, why, of course, we're not going to be able to have a sustainable future. Would that be a fair analysis?
That's a fair assessment. He certainly believes that humanity as a whole needs to be led from above, and that there is no notion that either nations will be able to guide their own destiny, and let alone that individuals and families should be able to guide their own destinies and live in a traditional manner.
And this is the tragedy we have today. We have these people, these elitists, these college professors, these people, of course, who are teaching our youth, and they're not really educating them in college. They're indoctrinating them in college and destroying their belief in God and in family and country. And they want, of course, to replace that belief in God with this other religion. Of course, many of them espouse this very occultic New Age form of thing. They're not just moving them from believing in God into atheism, but there's a third step, and that is into this occult belief that there is a power out there, and you want to get yourself into contact with that supreme power. And it's certainly not the God of the Bible, they will tell you. And if you put yourself in touch with that power, why, there's great wealth and fortune and everything that you wanted, fame, it's there, and that actually it is. There is a force out there you can put yourself into touch with, but let me warn you, ladies and gentlemen, that is the last thing in the world you want to do. Far better to put your faith in the God of the Bible and look to him for guidance and for aid than to go to the force that motivates Paul Ehrlich and so many of our college professors and our universities and students of learning today. If you dare to mention there's a God, if you dare, of course, to mention that you believe that there might be some sort of intelligent design, you'll be really rousted out of that university. And if you're, as listeners, if you have not seen the Ben Stein production Expelled, you can get it from Netflix, you can get it at the video store, get it and watch it, Expelled with Ben Stein, and see what happened to college professors and people at the Smithsonian Institute and other so-called institutions of learning, who dared to suggest that maybe, just maybe, there was some intelligence to the way that humanity, the DNA molecule, are designed. And that's not permitted today. There is no academic freedom in our universities. There is academic conformity, and if you don't conform, you're out. And unless you agree with people like Paul Ehrlich, why, of course, you have a lifetime protection. Well, anyway, Sydney, as we see these things unfolding, what can the average individual do? Because these people control the media. These people control the educational system. These people are indoctrinating our children. They're no longer citizens of America. They're globalists. They don't understand what's good about America, but they can sure tell you everything bad about America. How are we going to address this?
I don't have a political strategy, but certainly the first step is for people to connect with God and understand the truth, to be able to distinguish truth from lies, and to give no support for the lie. Solzhenitsyn had said the same thing during the Soviet time, that give no support to the lie, and that might be as much as can be done now.
All right, hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Lee Penn, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Lee Penn. We're talking about population control. And basically, of course, all the things you hear about population control really aren't true. The only populations that are really increasing rapidly in the world today are the Muslim population. And I think that's why we're going to go to war, in part what the Muslims do is simply eliminate, countless hundreds of millions of them. And we are going to war with the Muslim world. It's only a matter of time. Certainly, if you look in Europe, the population is dying off. You look in America, why, if it weren't for the influx of people from Mexico and from the Muslim world and foreigners coming in having lots of children, why certainly our population would be falling. Basically, among the traditional Anglos here in America, the reproduction rate is about 1.6 children per family. Certainly, even in India, the population rate is falling. It's under control very well in China today with their one-child policy, incidentally largely funded by the United States. It is only in the Muslim world where the population is increasing rapidly. Certainly this even in Africa. Why? Because of the vaccination programs, they've dropped the incidence of fertility dramatically. And very few people know what's going on.
That in the Muslim world, even there, in places like Pakistan and some other highly populated Muslim countries, that birth rates are dropping, even in Iran, of all places.
Well, certainly, unfortunately, there are certain things I think that they're putting in their diet or in the injections they're being given that alter the reproduction. And there's not one doctor in 1,000 who realizes the effect of the mercury in vaccines on reproduction. That is totally suppressed and not allowed to be mentioned here in the United States.
And that's, you know, the discussion of the food supply, the water supply, the adverse effects of genetic engineering, the adverse effects of certain vaccines, that's an area which I have little knowledge of and didn't go into in my own SCP article. So you're providing some new information to me, too.
Well, maybe I can stimulate you to start looking into it because, of course, you have a very, very excellent ministry and an excellent outreach. And people need to understand the things that are going on because nobody talks about them. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Lee Penn. And Lee, would you like to get your website out? Tell people how they can get your information.
Okay. One way to access my work is to go to leepenn.org, www.leepenn.org, and you'll find two links on that page. One will take you to a free online copy of my book, False Dawn, about globalism and the New World Religion. And the other link will take you to an index of my magazine articles, including many of my stories for the Spiritual Counterfeits Project Journal that cover the New Age movement, the threats to peace and to civil liberties that have been in place and are getting worse with time, the occultism of the New Age movement, problem in the churches, and the question of how to deal with disaster or, in the extreme, how to deal with apocalypse.
Well, because one of the things I think that is so vitally important is people understand that there is an organized effort to bring in a new religion. Would you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think it's an important subject, and the average individual does not understand that the whole idea of globalism or bringing a world government also involves, parallel to that, bringing in a world religion. Would you like to develop that perhaps a little bit?
Certainly. And it's tied into the population control movement because in the 19th century, liberal Christian activists, Fabian socialists, and theosophists were the leaders of the interfaith movement that arose from 1893 onward. And these were the very same people who were pushing as far back as the late 1800s for legalization of abortion, legalization and expanded use of birth control, and generally promoting anti-family propaganda more than a century ago. And since the late 1800s, the same group of agitators, again amongst liberal Christians, theosophists, and occultists, who have promoted the interfaith movement and the development of a one-world syncretistic religion, have also promoted this ideology of population control and of global governance. So in a sense, it's all part of one large and rather evil package.
And I don't think the average individual really understands that they've infiltrated our churches, they've changed the music of the churches, but more than that, they've changed the message of the church, both the Protestant and the Catholic Church. Would you agree?
They have. They've done their best to make those of us who believe what was usual for people to believe before 1950, we are ones who are now called reactionaries or extremists. And these people who are introducing lethal ideas that would have been unheard of for many centuries before the recent times, they're the ones who are considered to be mainstream or moderate, and they're the ones who have control of the major institutions.
I'm curious, really, that so many of our churches have become simply, they've become sort of a social welfare programs. I mean, how are we going to help people? And there's nothing wrong with helping people. But the reason that you want to help people is because you are a sinner, you've been saved by our Lord Jesus Christ, and because your life has been transformed, you're going to help people. The major function of Christianity is not to help people. It's to transform the individual lives so that the transformed people will want to be like Christ and to help others.
That's right. And, no social system, whether it be capitalistic, socialistic, or a mixed economy, can work well if the population as a whole is corrupt, vicious, selfish, lazy, whatever. The only way that any social order can work is if people are virtuous, and virtue is the result of salvation. It's first necessary first to turn toward God, to repent of sin, and to be transformed, and only from there is it possible to go out and do any good for other people, whether individually or collectively.
Well, here in the area where I live, there's an increasing tone of violence, certainly over in Salinas and Watsonville, and even spreading into our own community. And people are saying, what we need is more classes and more programs, you know, after school where the children will be kept busy, they won't get into gangs. But basically, nobody, I believe, is addressing the real issue. First of all, you took any mention of God out of our schools. You took prayer out of our schools. You took the Ten Commandments out of our schools. You taught the children that there were no sense of values, that they would be determined of it was what was right and what was wrong. This was certainly part of an organized program to shift values, to change the values of the child, so they would become the determinative of what was right, what was wrong. And then we told them that they had evolved from lower animals, from monkeys, and from other base animals. And then we wonder why they act like monkeys or like base animals. And people don't understand. Once you take God out of a society, you're laying yourself open for moral anarchy and chaos. And then we wonder why we have chaos and nobody ever tells what it really is all about. Oh, no, we need more basketball and volleyball. And there's nothing wrong with basketball and volleyball. But you've got to get kids a sense of values.
And what makes the story even more ominous is that no society ever lasts long with chaos. Always people want order, and they want security, and they want peace. And sooner or later, if they have to or are driven to go for a strong leader and a totalitarian regime to get peace and order, that's what they'll go for. And the totalitarian regime that they'll go for is precisely the kind of regime that the supporters of population reduction and globalism favor. A complete reordering of world society, a complete reordering of family, religion, consumption, every aspect of human life from birth to death, more radical than even the Soviets had imagined that they would do in 1917. And it isn't just totalitarianism that follows chaos. Organized false religion and ultimately an evil one-world religion follows chaos, because people have souls, and they will seek food for their soul, and atheism doesn't provide food for the soul. Occultism and false religion, Gaia worship, worse things than that, do provide counterfeit food for the soul, and that's what might come rush into the vacuum. The triumph of atheism, I suspect, is going to be very temporary, and what follows that will be an inverted religion where evil is promoted to be good.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that, first of all, you had a Judeo-Christian culture. Then you move from that to an atheistic culture. But it did not end there simply with atheism and humanism. It then began, there's a third stage, and that is you begin look into this other religion, this other spirituality. And, of course, this is the most rapidly growing religion in America today. We call it the New Age. We call it the occult. Call it what you will. It's nothing new about it. It's the ancient paganism that existed thousands of years ago, but they've just put a nice face on it now and confused it with eating properly, and suddenly a lot of the things that go, I would agree with, but of course, unfortunately, why it's leading people away from the only real source of direction they have in their lives, and that is the Word of God. Well, certainly, they've certainly infiltrated the Catholic Church as well. Said to you, if converting to Catholicism, this must have been quite a shock to you to see some of the things going on in the Catholic Church today.
Well, I knew that there were problems. I didn't expect I was going into anything perfect. I just didn't know that within 10 or 15 years after my entering the Catholic Church, that the Pope would embrace globalism and the New World Order in the way that he has done.
And, of course, he's actually embracing a world religion. Of course, everybody thinks that, I think most Catholics think that's going to be world Catholicism, but I got news for him.
Sure. Whatever new religion is going to be promoted, it's not going to be anything like traditional Orthodox Catholicism. It'll be a counterfeit.
Amen. Of course, the same thing is holding as far as Protestants are concerned. The average Protestant really doesn't understand what's going on today. And when we hear some of our leaders saying, you know, you don't have to really be a Christian to get into heaven. And when the leading evangelical in the United States makes that statement on television, you have to begin to ask yourself, what in heaven's name is going on? And I'll tell you what's going on, and it's not in heaven's name. Well, certainly, do you have any suggestions? How are we going to reach people? How are we going to get them to understand what's going on as far as population control, as far as the shift away from traditional religion to this new, or I should say, to this ancient pagan religion, which is replacing Christianity in America today?
The first step is simply to get the truth out and to help people distinguish between truth and lies and to strengthen people's courage so that they give no support to the lie. And that would mean that we have to speak against radical environmentalism, that we have to distinguish between the kind of reasonable environmental preservation steps that are necessary. Certainly the Gulf oil disaster is showing that, it just might be that drilling wide and drilling deep and going to the extremes of technology is hazardous, and it may be an indicator that we have to make some changes. That as an example. But there's a difference between reasonable, sober, and prudent steps for environmental protection and conservation of resources and reordering the whole world economy on the basis of extreme and unproven environmental theories. That's one thing we have to address. The other is to address the various reasons that people have, whether real or false reasons to abort or to contracept or otherwise to engage in their own private population control. This is where Christian charity and Christian intervention for those who are under temptation can make a real difference. And certainly we need to push back against legal abortion on demand. We need to push back against the normalization of contraception. All of those things are abortion and contraception are essential parts of every radical environmental strategy, whether the environmentalist is an extremist or a moderate. And we can frustrate them by frustrating some of their major population control strategies.
Well, I think that you can't force people not to use contraceptives, but you can certainly point out that the estrogens and the progesterones will have a permanent effect on many people, women's physiology. It's very important for a woman to have a child or several children because it dramatically decreases her incidence of breast carcinoma. And that information has been intentionally suppressed. As in the fact that 1 in 3 lesbians develop a breast carcinoma, why they've suppressed that, the last thing they would want is for a young woman who are considering entering a lesbian lifestyle to realize, of course, that they may well be endangering their life because of that lifestyle. And certainly there's so much about certainly what's going on, you know. Of course, the Bible tells us to be fruitful and multiply. And certainly looking back on my life, I wish we'd had a much larger family, but it's a time of life where we're not going to change that. But I really do believe that, of course, having a large family is something that is pleasing to the individual, is pleasing to society, and certainly I think is pleasing to God.
And another step is spiritual. Since we are facing pressure on all fronts from an array of enemies, and because many political strategies have been tried and have failed, we have to now go back to the basics. And I'm simply going to quote some of what I said in the SCP article, if you allow me to take that liberty.
You go right ahead. You don't have to ask for permission.
All right. The first and essential step is for us to pray for God to have mercy on our enemies and for God to grant them the grace of conversion. Christ's injunction given during the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5:44-45, is still binding, no matter how dire our circumstances. So that's the first point, is to pray for the people who are promoting or are blindly going along with these extreme agendas. If they're enemies, we have to pray for them.
Amen to that. Go ahead.
Okay. The second point is that we cannot hate or curse our opponents out of their seats of power or influence. And I'm speaking here specifically against some folks who have promoted the use of Psalm 109 and similar imprecatory prayers as a biblical, quote-unquote, response to leftists or heretics or evil rulers. And the fact is that hate doesn't convert people away from sin to godliness. Only the love of God can sway the radicals from their destructive course. The dispensation of vengeance is not for us. Not now or not ever, vengeance will come by acts of God himself at a time and in a manner directed by him alone. As St. Paul said, "Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." So again, this is saying, pray for our enemies and persecutors, don't hate them, and don't rely on hatred as a means of combating them. Another point is that sober and well-reasoned conservation of the earth and its resources is entirely consistent with the mandates God gave us in the scriptures. Quote, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and all those who dwell within." That's from Psalm 24:1. We don't own the earth, God does. When God gave mankind dominion over, quote, "every living thing that moves on the earth," as he said in Genesis 1:28, he gave it to us to, quote, "till it and keep it," Genesis 2:15, not to pollute and ruin it. Good stewards, responsible tenants, conserve and maintain their landlord's property. They don't destroy it or make it uninhabitable. Good rulers, those with dominion, don't exploit or slay those over whom they have dominion. They defend their subjects and establish order in which all may flourish. If we act otherwise, we call on ourselves the inevitable consequence, which would be a divine judgment that the time has come, quote, "for destroying the destroyers of the earth." And that's from Revelation 11:18.
Well, there's a lot of great amount of wisdom in the Revelation. In fact, I'm doing a study on it. I'm preparing for a television program we're going to be doing back in New York, and talking about certain parts of the revelation. And really, if you analyze it in view of what's going on today, there's certainly shocking similarities, but that's for a subject for another evening. But there's a great deal of wisdom in the Bible, and people who certainly ignore it or do not to Chris rely upon God's word are leaving themselves open for all sorts of problems, because when men do what they want to, we create moral anarchy. Go right ahead, Lee.
Okay. And the last point is a difficult one, but it needs to be made in any event. It may be that long-term economic growth, let alone the worldwide attainment of first world living standards, isn't possible. It is true that overpopulation and man-caused global warming are myths, but global pollution, extinction of species, resource depletion, violent competition among men for scarce water and energy, and social-political collapses from overstrained social and economic systems, those are reality. And when pollution in one country crosses oceans, as in the case of pollution from China coming over to the U.S., or pollution from the Gulf possibly going into the Gulf Stream.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Go right ahead, Lee.
What we're facing is a dilemma that when an emerging plague can circle the world by air in a week or less, it may seem, and I'm going to emphasize the word seem, that global...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, I was horrified when I saw the plight of the people in Haiti after the earthquake, but a similar event could happen right here in the United States, and that's why you should call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and purchase a supply of his products. Freeze-drying is a great way to preserve food. I know, because I bought a supply 40 years ago, and when I opened a can recently, the food was as fresh and tasty as when I purchased it. We're living in uncertain times, so if you'd like to have a supply of ground beef, diced beef, chicken, vegetables, or fruit on hand, call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and mention you heard about him right here at Radio Liberty.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
In the Gulf, as far as the what we're seeing, well, let me explain to you that I believe this whole thing is contrived. I think that they are doing everything possible to avoid stopping this oil spill, and we'll be talking about this next hour. We have a geologist who's to be with us, and his name is Chris Landau. He's worked on oil rigs, and he certainly he's an environmentalist, but he certainly recognizes that they're not really trying to do what's logical to stop this tragic oil spill. And you have to ask yourself, why could it possibly be that, of course, they want to stop offshore drilling, at least for America? Could it be that they really want to destroy the economy down there along the Gulf? Could it be that they really, of course, want to pass the cap and trade legislation to try to get people to cut back on the use of fossil fuels, get us out of our cars, and lower our living standards? Could that be the real motivation behind this? I believe it is. And until you understand we're dealing with people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God, you can't understand anything going on. Until you understand we have a little group that controls both political parties, controls the wealth of this country, most of the corporations, the major media, the universities, and the government, why, of course, nothing makes sense. I hope you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. I hope you'll go into my website, RadioLiberty.com, and read my April and my May newsletters. Read them, and we're doing a series here on the secret cabal. There really is a secret cabal, ladies and gentlemen. I know because I went through Professor Quigley's papers back at Georgetown University back in 1980, and that's another story. Sometime we'll tell you what I found when I went there to find out how he knew about the secret society. And ladies and gentlemen, it's still functioning today, at least the movement that Cecil Rhodes created for a one-world government and a new world religion. He actually laid out the plan in 1877, and it's being fulfilled as we speak today. So you need to get the information, and you need to help us get the information out. We've got the documentation. We need your help to circulate it. And so certainly we would hope that you'd get our DVD on the secret mystery of America's beginning. Secret mystery of America's beginning. You get the DVD, that's a three DVD set. You get the DVD, they sold their souls for rock and roll. You'll get the DVD, The Emergence. This is the story of the coming of the Antichrist. It's presented by Constance Cumby, who's been researching this, for over 30 years. And then, of course, you want to get the Atlantis Connection by Chris Pinto. Because America is to become the new Atlantis, to lead the world into this one world order, which is why we are fighting in the Middle East today. I mean, we've got almost 200,000 troops and contractors in Afghanistan fighting between 50 and 100 members of Al-Qaeda. Between 50 and 100 members of Al-Qaeda, yep. We got 200,000 people there, and my goodness, what would happen if they had 1,000 people there? Why, we'd have to have, really about 10 times what we've got. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't make any sense unless you understand this is simply a great diversion to keep our troops there. In preparation, they'll be there, stationed there for the coming war. And a lot of them, unfortunately, are going to die in another senseless war. Just like Vietnam was a war we never fought to win. Korea was a war we never fought to win. And we're certainly not trying very hard to win the war in Afghanistan. And because we've done nothing but destroy the economy of Iraq and Baghdad today. If you have 2 hours of electricity today, you're very, very lucky. But under the wicked Saddam Hussein, they had regular electricity and water, and they had jobs and a prosperous society. He was a wicked man. But remember, he had worked for the CIA. We have books written back in the 1970s talking about how Saddam Hussein worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, but you're not going to read about that or hear about that from the controlled media. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, pull down our newsletters, check out the documentation, and then please pray for America. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. Pray for revival, because as Lee said, we're involved in a spiritual battle. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Gwen, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Chris Landau, who is a geologist. You'll recognize his accent. He's from South Africa. But, of course, he's living here in the United States. He's worked on oil rigs, and he understands oil drilling. And, Chris, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan, for having me.
Well, basically, a lot of people in America are really worried about what's going on down there in the Gulf, and they really don't understand it. And we get so many conflicting stories and conflicting information, and we hear about the oil spill, and we see the oil, tarboil balls washing up on the beaches, and then we hear all sorts of stories about toxic gases, and then we hear about how the government has effectively blocked, at least up until recently, the use of certainly these programs by which they can filter the water, take the water in, get the oil out of it, and then suddenly there's a small amount of oil still in the water. But we said, oh, we can't put water that contains oil back into the Gulf, so we won't try to get the oil out at all, which doesn't make any sense. And of course, the skimmers are certainly doing some good. Apparently, they're burning some of the oil. But why don't you give us your impression of what happened, why we got into the problem, why, of course, the oil rig, the Deep Horizon, went down, and then, of course, what should be done, and, of course, the various alternatives of treatment that have come up so far that don't seem to be working very well, and then what this is going to do as far as the economy of the Gulf and the health of the people living in that area. So you pick up the story.
Okay, just a brief history. On the Gulf, we all know that it caught fire on the 20th of April and it burnt and sank on the 22nd. From that stage on, it just seems to have been a nightmare of bumbling from BP, Transocean, Halliburton, everybody pointing fingers at each other to carry the blame. But nobody really seems to be looking at it in a objective fashion and saying, okay, this is what happened and this is the solution. Now, I've spent time on about 50 high-pressure oil and gas rigs here in California, which is not the Gulf, but we went down to about 10 to 12,000 feet here. We got our high-pressure gas from about 7,000 feet onwards to 12,000 feet. Beyond 12,000 feet, when there was such great amounts of gas, they didn't go any deeper because they couldn't control the balance between the mud weight and the gas coming out. Now, what happened in this well is they probably encountered about 50 gas and oil horizons from about 5 to 7,000 feet down to the bottom. When I was logging as a mud logging geologist, that's what I encountered.
Now, basically what you're saying is it'd be various levels, of sort of levels of oil and gas as you drill down through these levels. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Most textbooks seem to point to a single level of oil and the gas sits above the oil, and that's a single level as drawn in the textbooks for simplicity's sake. And that's not how the situation is. You have multiple layers of limestone, sandstone, mudstone, and you find the gas really in the middle of these calcareous layers of sandstone, above the calcareous sandstone, and below the calcareous sandstone. What I'm pointing out with the 50 layers is that when they went down, they went through many, many horizons, and those were the kicks you heard about. As they went through each layer of gas, the mud weight was, shall we say, underbalanced. They were looking for about 30 to 50 units of gas as they went through, which is about 1% methane. At 5,000 units, you hear about mud logging geologists talking about units. 5,000 units, that's 100% natural gas. Well, natural gas is 95% methane, it's about 1% propane.
Hold that, we'll be right back. Okay. Lee, you go right ahead.
Okay, sorry?
No, you go right ahead there.
Are we?
You are. We're broadcasting out all over America. Okay. Go right ahead.
Great. Okay. So as I said, natural gas is about 95% methane, 1% propane, 1% butane, 1% pentane, 1% ethane, approximately. And when you get to one of these horizons, which could be 6 inches thick, it could be 20 feet thick, you're immediately drilling with this underbalanced, or the density of the mud weight is not that great, so that when you get a kick of gas or a horizon, you're busy logging that. You say, okay, 6,420 feet, for another 3 feet we got gas, and then it disappeared as we drilled into other non-producing gas horizons, and so on. And you go down, you weight up the drilling mud with barium sulfate, and you just keep that fine balance, not too heavy, because it gets too heavy, then you don't get any gas readings because you weighted it up too much as you go through, and not too light, because if it's too light, all the gas comes roaring out. But if you're careless and you're in a hurry and you weight up the drilling mud too much with barium sulfate, it blows out the drilling well, balloons it out. And what does that mean? It means that the drilling mud is now denser than the surrounding rock. So the rock might be, say, at about 2.2 grams per cubic centimeter to, say, 3 grams per cubic centimeter, and you might be, say, at 2.6 there in the rock, and you weighted it up to 3. So the barium sulfate and the drilling mud just goes straight into the rock, into the pore space. Think of it as a sponge, not a big hole, although you can get in dolomitic and limestone horizons, but think of it more as a sponge, and the drilling mud just escapes into that. When it does escape in great quantities, as this well blew out, as according to the BP engineer and the Mineral Management Service who interviewed the chief design engineer for the drilling, it blew out on many, many times, and they lost thousands of barrels of oil into the well system while they were drilling. Once you've done that, you've destroyed the well, and you cannot rely on it to be safe anymore, because at any moment, all your drilling mud goes out into the pore space, and once there's no mud to suppress the oil and gas, it comes roaring up the well, which is just what it did. And they didn't have a blowout preventer to save them, so basically everything got destroyed. So you're dealing with a compromised well, compromised casing, compromised cement, everything is compromised, and they're drilling two more wells into a compromised zone to destroy everything further and to create more chaos. So that's how I see the situation. They should be drilling 8 wells around us about 1,500 feet away to depressurize the whole area.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Chris Landau. And Chris was just saying that basically what happens is, of course, you have to balance the amount of the drilling fluid. They call it mud. It's a barium compound. You know, and if it's too heavy, why, of course, it'll tend to flow out into the porous rock that you're going through. If it's too heavy, why, you can't measure the pressure of the gas. And what you want to know is whether the pressure adequate gas and they have to be able to measure that gas pressure. But of course, what happened, of course, apparently, that they were careless, and that they blew out the well, and they blew out the casing, they blew out the cement around that, they blew out a lot of the rocks surrounding this, and suddenly you've got this totally unstable well. Would that be a fairly good analysis of it, Chris?
That would be a great description of the situation now.
Now, Chris basically thinks that they should be drilling parallel wells. Were you saying 8 or 18 wells around it?
Well, I'd like 8 wells to go in. Initially, I said 4, but just to be on the safe side, get 8 wells about 1,500 feet apart from each other and depressurize the zone, build vertical wells, not wells that go down into this existing one, the directional wells, which are slow to drill because you've got a mud motor and you've got to drill carefully along with this mud motor, taking directions, correcting for altitude, azimuth, etc.
Well, now, how long would it take to drill these separate wells, the ones they're putting in now, where they're trying to find a needle in a haystack? In other words, they're going down there, and they're trying to, after going down a mile down to the Gulf floor, and then down about 3 miles beyond that. And then they're going to try to find from several hundred or maybe 1,000 feet away this 24-inch, 23-inch pipe that they have down there. And so finding a needle in a haystack would probably be a lot easier than that, but I'm sure that they know what they're doing, and they'll actually eventually be able to tip into that. But they say they're not going to be able to get into this other pipe until the end of August, which is a month and a half from now. And then they're not sure it's going to work, because it would really depend, of course, if the casing, the well is simply blown out down to the bottom, why all they could pump in all the mud they want to, and it's not going to do any good. Chris, how long would it take if they were just going to be putting regular wells right down into the oil and gas field without trying to find the needle in the haystack? How long would it take to drill one of those and decompress this well?
Well, in our work here, we drilled 10,000 feet on our good wells in 2 weeks. So we were drilling 5,000 feet a week. And the guys were really drilling fast, yeah. So that was straightforward drilling, and I would estimate no more than 2 months to get these wells in.
All right. Well, they're claiming, of course, they're going to have one well in the end of August, and the other one will be a few weeks behind that. Well, we can just hope and pray that it's going to work. But they're admitting they don't know whether this is going to work or not. So if it doesn't work, then what are they going to do?
Yeah, they should have started drilling the other wells already. I think one of the Russian scientists who believed in the abiotic oil said they should be trying 10 things at once, not just one thing and watching it fall apart, and then 6 weeks later try another thing. It seems to be so inept, it seems to be so lacking in vision. Beyond me.
Well, unless, of course, they're really not trying very hard to solve the problem, and that is another alternative, although most people would find that difficult to believe. But why would you wait, you know, until the other, well, the end of August, and then if it doesn't work, then we're going to try to find something else? I believe you're right. We should be doing everything possible, and maybe one of them would work, but if you're only doing one thing at a time, it'll take 10 times as long.
I don't know, maybe our politicians can't comprehend the seriousness of it, this situation, or they've got other things on their mind, or I have no idea, because they're certainly not putting the efforts into solving the problem, and it is an enormous environmental catastrophe, so somebody really needs to get enthusiastic about a solution, and so far they don't have one in place.
Well, basically what we need are people who know the oil business, like you, and I'm sure they have people who know the oil business, but it doesn't seem that they're really trying very hard. Well, what are the complications, first of all, that we're going to see as a result of this, as far as the oil, as far as the gas, as far as the dispersant that they're actually spraying down there to try to disperse and break the oil up so it'll mix with the water? What are the various complications? Could you take them one at a time and discuss them?
Okay. From this well, we get a number of gases that are being released. They are methane, and I'm just going to speak about the ones that are really of concern here, and the ones that are going to interact with the dispersants, interact with the oil, and be dangerous on their own. So basically, out of this well comes first on the list is hydrogen. And hydrogen is going to come up, escape, and go into the upper atmosphere and escape the planetary gravity of the Earth. Helium is a small amount in this well. It will also come out of the well, escape, and go up into the atmosphere. Water vapor is next as well. So it's going to escape. It's obviously going to be trapped in the ocean and just stay there. The fourth lightest is about 0.68 kilograms per cubic meter, and that's got a volatility of greater than 53,000 millimeters. So it's highly volatile. It comes up and it reacts with the water, the salt water, and via the vert synthesis creates methyl chloride, which is a carcinogenic compound. It's got two bad things about it. Not only is it volatile, but it's also soluble in water, and it's highly reactive, and will also escape into the higher parts of the atmosphere. So methane is our main problem. Of course, they're burning it off at the moment, but more than that, what it does is reaction with chlorine in the water, the sodium chloride, the salt in the water, makes methyl chloride, which is a carcinogenic substance. A little bit of ammonia would be a release from the well. Natural gas, we've got the next ones, which would be ethane, propane, butane, pentane, and those will be in smaller quantities. They'll also be dissolved in the oil to a lesser extent, but they form a small quantity of this, and they're your normal alkanes, and they're not that toxic in themselves. Carbon monoxide is the fourth one, which is very close to the density of air at about 1.1 kilograms per cubic meter, volatility greater than 26,000 millimeters, so it's also going to escape up into the atmosphere and just be part of the gases added to our global warming. Nitrogen, okay, we don't have that. Air is about 1.2 kilograms per cubic meter in weight, so we're dealing with that as our balance. The next lot of gases that are going to come out will be heavier, like ethane would be 1.264 kilograms per cubic meter. The oxygen, okay, I'll just put that down, it's not coming out of the well, it's 1.354 kilograms per cubic meter. Hydrogen sulfide, the next one to be concerned with, 1.45 kilograms per cubic meter. Volatility of 13,376 millimeters, highly volatile. What does that mean? It means it escapes, it's got a greater propensity to form a gas than a liquid. It wants to be a gas. So it goes into the air, it's highly toxic at 5 to 10 parts per million. That makes your eyes sore at 50 parts per million. It damages your eyes at 100 parts per million. It anesthetizes you so that you can no longer smell it at 350 parts per million to 400. It kills about half the population at about 1,000 parts per million. One breath is fatal. We're at 2 parts per million. So a long way to go, say, to 400 parts per million, but still it's increasing and will probably make those people with sensitive noses and that sort of thing and throats react to hydrogen sulfide. So
no, but Chris, are you talking now on shore 50 miles away, or are you talking there at the drilling site?
Yes, on shore, where the EPA has set up their meters. And if you go to the EPA website, you'll find them publishing quite a few things already. They're publishing the volatile organic compounds. They're publishing the particulate matter with about 5 microns, 25 microns, 10 microns. They're publishing benzene, I think it's xylene, toluene, ethylbenzene as a couple of the volatile organic compounds. So they all been published, and I'm talking about onshore now. So at the moment onshore we're getting 1 to 2 parts per million in hydrogen sulfide.
What about out there at the drilling site, though? Because basically my concern is that the people out there, as far as I can see, are not wearing any protection at all, and I would think they'd be getting very high doses of benzene and hydrogen sulfide. What are your thoughts?
If they aren't wearing any protection, they're taking their lives into the hand on a short-term basis and on a long-term basis for getting cancer. So it would be insane on their part not to be wearing chemical masks. But I can't help it if they're not being warned about it or not taking it seriously, because they should be taking it very seriously. A lot of the drilling rigs here in California, the ones especially that drill for hydrothermal water, and many of the guys died on those wells in the beginning in the 80s because they didn't take hydrogen sulfide seriously and they just dropped dead on site.
All right, fine. And then what about the danger of benzene?
Okay, we'll just go up towards benzene. I'm approaching that. The next one is argon. That's going to come out of the well, very volatile, inert gas, non-reactive, keep going up. Methyl chloride, as I said, is going to form from the reaction with methane. It's going to be produced out of the salt water. It's a flammable, carcinogenic compound. It causes burst defects. It's not great, and it's soluble in water at about 5.3 grams per liter. So it's not only volatile, but it dissolves in water and it dissolves in oily compounds. So it attacks you from two ways. Carbon dioxide being released, about 1.87 kilograms per cubic meter, a little bit. Ethanol I've put down as I'm reading off my summary, which you can find on Op-Ed News, on the gases in the densities and the volatilities. To give one an idea, it's just there at 1.9. No ethanol in the well itself. They added to our gasoline afterwards. Ozone, just to give one an idea, 2.14 kilograms per cubic meter. So you'll hear about ozone being produced from cars and that, and it stays down quite low on the ground. We have ozone in the upper atmosphere, which is basically formed and destroyed by ultraviolet radiation. Then the next one is propane at 2.42, butane at 2.7, not very toxic gases these. Get to benzene at 2.7. Now, benzene is quite heavy, so as it comes out, it's really going to stay near the surface. It's more than twice the weight of air, but it's got some sort of reaction in the sense that because it's not...
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. All right, Chris, you were talking about benzene.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount gold and silver trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
At certain levels, and basically, according to Chris, according to the EPA website, and he's checked this out, and you'll find this on his website, and you can link to EPA from his website, in many areas along the Gulf, they have 10 times the safe amount of benzene, which, of course, taking you into the carcinogenic level. Now, you're not going to get cancer tomorrow, but you will get it down the line with 10 times the acceptable amount. How many areas along the Gulf Coast have these toxic levels of benzene that really are unsafe?
Well, there are many levels. There are many areas along the coast. If you check out the EPA website, and remember that it's one part per billion, so a thousand parts per billion, which is one part per million. It's the same thing. And we're at 72 parts per billion. So we need to be 15 times higher than the values now to be constant daily to be carcinogenic. But what they're saying is at 20 micrograms, which is about 7 parts per billion, you divide by 3.19, that is sort of their yellow level, which they're warning for health reasons. So up to 20 parts per billion, they're saying, this is a sort of a warning. 20 micrograms per cubic meter, which is about 7 parts per billion. They're warning as a yellow zone. But now they're talking about, as there are figures, at 232 micrograms per cubic meter, or 72 parts per billion. So there are many, many places. You can check out the EPA website and go down there. They list the amounts on parts per million. Every day there's a new data sheet PDF that's produced. Everybody can look at them every day, and there's latitude and longitude that the EPA are putting out there, so you can check it out for yourself.
Well, now, basically, is the level increasing? Is it decreasing? Is it staying about the same, level of benzene?
Sorry, I've monitored for it only for a week now. I've gone into and created these things, and I will continue. I've been writing some other articles as well on this stuff, so I will continue to monitor it and bring updated website. So my data is only from the 24th to the 29th of June. I will continue to go on with that. I find that the levels are higher than I saw earlier on. So for me, I was quite amazed, and I saw the figures were already up to 72 parts per billion.
All right. Now, remember, first, it's got to be up to 1,000 parts per billion before it really...
before it's continually carcinogenic. So
right.
An 8-hour day at 1,000 parts per billion is going to give you cancer, no doubt about it. But there's going to be people that the effects are going to be more toxic for at lower levels, and it's going to be carcinogenic, if this continues at these levels for extended 24-hour periods.
And, of course, the thing is, we're all different. I mean, some people can tolerate high doses of things. Some people can't tolerate it at all. So I'm sure that they have average, but certainly, unfortunately, we are all different, and some people react much more readily than others. So the toxic gases then really are a potential hazard, and they seem to be, nothing much is being done other than putting up so much material there that most people just get confused. In other words, what they're doing is they're dumping material on us, the material that a lot of it is extraneous. I mean, how many people really care about the argon? Well, the thing is that people should be zeroing in on the benzene, because that is the great hazard to health, isn't it?
I agree with you 100%. There's too much confusing data, too much irrelevant stuff to one's health. They should have separate websites and warn the people of. I've listed 5 most dangerous chemicals that are being released, apart from the 3 glycols, the double alcohol ethers that they're putting in, and the single alcohol ether compound that are in the Corexit. But should I continue with sulfur dioxide?
You go right ahead.
Okay, great. So sulfur dioxide is 2.77 kilograms per cubic meter. That's another dangerous gas. I think you need to get up to about 5,200 parts per million, so quite high, before it just kills you. I'll check on my figures there, but sulfur dioxide is not as bad as hydrogen sulfide by any means. It's got a great volatility. It's 2,614 millimeters of mercury versus 760, so it's 4 times as volatile as air. And so it'll go up into the atmosphere very, very readily. Cyclohexane, 2.9 kilograms per cubic meter, one of the dangerous gases, not as bad as benzene, but volatile and probably also going to be toxic for your long term. Then pentane at 2.99, don't worry about it. Hexane, also 3 kilograms per cubic meter.
Hold those thoughts. We'll be back here in just a moment with Chris Landau here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead.
Okay. Then we've got one of the Corexis alcohol ethers, the 1,2-propanediol. Actually, that's a glycol. That's a double alcohol ether. As soon as you see that diol, we know it's a 2-alcohol ether compound. And that's got a low volatility, 0.12. Compare that with water vapor at 17. So it's basically not going to go into the atmosphere. It's going to stay and dissolve in the water. It's going to make you sick if you drink the water. I guess nobody's going to be drinking the seawater, but it's going to be bad for those people that are swimming in the water, those people that are working in the water. It's going to stay in the water and cause harm to those people that are in the water. Let's see, that's at about 3.12 kilograms per cubic meter. Then we got toluene at 3.14, 21 millimeters of volatility, not very great. I put nitrogen dioxide in there, 3.4, yes, sort of toxic, not a gas released by cars, quite heavy, stays on the ground. Heptane, again, it's a 7-carbon alkane, 3.5 kilograms per cubic meter. Its volatility is 40. We don't have to worry about these things like ethylbenzene, xylenes. They're not that bad. They've got a low volatility, and as far as carcinogenicity goes, they're 1,000 times less toxic than benzene. So all of those, trimethylbenzene, automethylparaxylene, ethyl toluene, 1,3-trimethylbenzene, they're all up now at 4 kilograms per cubic meter. So we get to naphthalene at 5.3 kilograms per cubic meter. That's an interesting compound. It's also released in the tarry stuff of oil and gas companies, oil and gas, the heavy end of the oil and gas fraction, and that's 5.3 kilograms per cubic meter, but low volatility, 0.08 compared to water vapor of 17. So it's not going to go much into the atmosphere. Heavy, stay on the ground and poison you as you walk along. And it's also only slightly soluble at 30 milligrams per liter. Then then from about 4.88 to 7.48, we have three of the Corexit compounds. The first one, 2,1,2-butoxy or 2-butoxyethanol, is again, these are not volatile, 0.88, and then polypropylene glycol butyl ether, 0.85, and dipropylene glycol monobutyl ether, 0.06. So again, they're going to stay in the water and make you feel sick if you're in the water. They're going to affect the water and cause the problems that they do cause. That sort of sums up the situation.
All right, well, we're going to bring some of our other stations back on board. We'll be back in just a moment here with Chris Landau. And this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Chris Landau. Now, Chris, I want you to get out your website and tell people how they can get your essays.
Okay, they can go to Op-Ed News, so that's O-P-E-D, News, N-E-W-S, and they can just put in Chris Landau, that's C-H-R-I-S-L-A-N-D-A-U, that's C-H-R-I-S-L-A-N-D-A-U, and it's O-P-E-D, News, opposite the editorial news.
All right, fine. Now, basically, what about this dispersant that they're using? They're spraying several million gallons of that. Supposedly, it's going to break down the oil, and so it'll dissolve in the water. What is going on there?
Okay, so this stuff is designed to hide the amount of oil that we're seeing and to keep it off the surface. It's sort of good and bad in two senses. One, it keeps the stuff away from the surface, doesn't let it come into the oil, it keeps it below the surface, which poisons and kills all the fish and the crayfish and the crabs and all the sea creatures, so it's not good for them, but it keeps the floating volatile away from the shore, otherwise there would be a greater quantity and they'd be in the air and they'd be killing us. So we're poisoning our water and poisoning our food source instead of poisoning ourselves. That's the idea behind it. So they're both evils as far as I'm concerned. They are toxic in themselves, these compounds. I'll write an article over the next couple of days about the four glycol ethers and alcohol ethers, and then the dispersants, which are the detergents as well inside those, which are designed to break up the oil as soaps and attach to the oil and keep them underneath the surface. So the water, the oil has been mixed with the water, so not only have you got the toxic effects of the alcohol ethers and double alcohol diol ethers, you've now got them attached to the oil, so it's bad in that sense. I just don't know. That's bad on the surface, bad below the surface.
Well, no, what's it going to do as far as the crayfish, the lobsters, I don't know if they have lobsters there, but I know they have crabs and other things like that. Well, that, of course, would be dangerous, a year or so from now as far as these underwater critters are concerned.
I would imagine that would be yes, because they would, these organic compounds are going to dissolve into their flesh, they're going to build up in their flesh and be kept there. As far as the alcohols and the ethers are concerned, they are more, they break down more quickly. So if you don't get cancer from them quickly, and I know that one of them causes cancer of the stomach, cancer of the lungs, so one of those alcohol ethers or diol ethers are not great. But they're going to build up as with heavy metals in the systems of these things, especially with the fact that a lot of the oil is not reaching the surface. A heavy fraction is sitting below the surface and moving along in plumes under the thermoclines, the cold water levels. So this is with us for a very long time, 20, 30, 50 years.
Well, now, basically, we know that back in 1979, there was a similar uncontrolled oil leak over there on the Mexican side of the Gulf of Mexico, and this went on for several months, and eventually, of course, the oil was washing up on the beaches and was getting in the marshes. They sprayed the marshes with bacteria who ate up the oil, and suddenly, within a matter of a couple of months, why the marshes were fine. And suddenly, do we know anything about the health hazards of the people who lived adjacent to that oil spill? Did they have any serious health matters, or it all got well and went away because nobody even talks about that oil spill back in 79, and it was very, very similar to what we have today.
I would love your guests to phone in and tell us about that. You know, we could all learn from the experiences there, whether there were any long-term effects, or maybe even some medical doctors did some studies and found that incidences were 10 times higher. Who knows? I would love some information on that. Perhaps your guests can phone in and tell us.
Well, I don't know if we have anybody mixed living down there in that area, but perhaps there's somebody out there. Unfortunately, tonight our answering program is not working. We don't have a ability to call in. Our telephone answering system just gave up the ghost day before yesterday, and we'll have it reinstalled on Friday. But for tonight, if you're, however, out there in the listening audience, you know something about that, you can call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. We'll pay for the call. That's 1-800-544-8927. And Cynthia would like to know what you know about that Gulf oil spill back in 1979. Very similar to this, it went on for many months. And eventually, of course, the oil was, buried. The sand came in and buried the oil, and the marshes got cleaned up, and now this is simply a remembrance of things past. So the question is, what's going to happen to the people there along the Gulf? What's going to happen to their income? What's going to happen to the fishing? What's going to happen to the tourist industry? How long is this going to go on? What's going to happen to British Petroleum as a result of this? Because they seem to be doing everything they can to actually avoid getting this issue fixed. So it's being used for political purposes to stop offshore oil drilling for American companies. It's not going to stop other companies from drilling over around Cuba, contracts are already being left. The foreign countries do actually go over there and build and drill offshore for Cuba, and certainly they're going to drill offshore in Brazil, and they're going to drill in the North Sea. They're going to drill all over the world. It's just that the Americans are not going to be allowed to drill, and that really doesn't make sense. Does it make sense to you, Chris?
Well, I'd like the whole world to stop drilling this toxic carcinogenic stuff, but that's my view on the whole situation. I think our fixation on it is not good for our economies.
But what would we do to, for gasoline for our cars?
Then we would make electric cars. I mean, they're fully electric cars already. And
but how long would that take to replace all the cars that are here now?
I don't know. If the people were sincere about it, I suppose it could all be done in 5 to 20 years.
Well, maybe 20 years from now, things will be a lot different. Anyway, let's go ahead as far as the effect of what's really going on down there. Do we have any idea of what about the health impact upon the people who are working on those rigs out in the Gulf now?
As far as I'm concerned, I don't know anything about it. I'd like, again, your listeners to phone in, people that are working in the Gulf, and tell us about the what they're finding out there. There seems to be a media shutdown on that side. I would love some information from people that are actually feeling the effects. I'm publishing the articles telling you of the concentrations on the shore that are blowing in, especially on the hydrogen sulfide and the benzene. I think what they need to start monitoring is the methyl chloride, which is both dissolvable in water and it's highly volatile, carried in the air, so it attacks you, as I say, through the water and in the air, and that's going to be the next most dangerous, more dangerous almost than any other compound, such a simple compound, methyl chloride.
All right. Now, basically, as far as things that are going on today, and as you're certainly looking at this from the fact that you've actually been on these oil rigs, certainly, why did they have so much trouble with this well? Was it the fact that the cementing didn't work? Was it the fact that they pulled out the oil mud too, I should say, the drilling mud too rapidly? Why did they have the problem with this well? Was it poorly put in? Was it that they drilled into an area with extremely high pressure? Some people talk about drilling into an oil volcano. What about these things we're hearing? We're getting so many conflicting stories.
Okay, as far as the oil is concerned, is when you drill, you've got to be very careful on that mud weight. You've got to not put in too much barium sulfate, or when you get to the heavy, dense muds that are up in iron sulfate and hematite sulfate, and these things are called oil muds and synthetic muds, which they were probably using offshore there. And the reason they took after oil is they wanted to save it and put it into the next oil well that they were going to drill. So that's one of the reasons that caused the disaster. But really the disaster was caused in the actual drilling. They may have gone into a highly fractured zone. And if it's producing that much oil, it is highly fractured. And so the drilling mud was too heavy for the zone, and they lost all the drilling mud down the many horizons before they encountered the end. They were having problems in losing the drilling mud many months before the end of the well. So there were many zones higher up in the well which have been blown out. So we don't even worry about the one there at under 20,000 feet. Who knows what's going on down there? I've called to publish the mud logs. I've called to publish the e-logs. So we can see on these mud logs, these geological cross-sections, you would see every level of gas that they encountered. So you would know, let's say there was a problem at 12,000 feet, one at 13,000, one at 14, and so on. You could see that. Everybody could see it. It would be plain as day. So if we could get the geological mud logs published, but I haven't been able to get anybody to give us the courtesy of publishing them, so we could all see what is happening. And again, I find it just one big cover-up. Instead of facing the truth, they're just covering up and pretending it's not there when it really is there.
Well, I think that this is really what disturbs me, and I think a lot of people are looking at this. Everything seems to be cover-up. We hear talk about people going down there trying to get pictures of what's going on and being told that they're not allowed to take pictures. We hear talk about people going out in boats and being told they can't go out in boats. We're being told that people want to go out and get pictures of this and see the from helicopters or planes, and there seem to be restrictions on all of these things, almost as if they don't want the American people to know what's going on. Do you get that feeling?
Yes, I get that feeling without a doubt. So we've been kept in the dark here and treated like idiots. And I think it's not a good attitude to have to the electorate that elect you and put you in power. We're not kids. You know, we must face reality. If things are bad, they're bad. Fix them. And I advocate solutions all the time. But nobody seems to be interested in the solution. They seem to just enjoy the problem. And I can't understand the psychology of it.
Well, of course, we hear about all sorts of objections. Certainly, the people in Louisiana wanted to build these dreams, sand dreams, to try to keep the oil offshore, and the government wouldn't let them do that. And they wanted to do a lot of things to try to protect the environment of the coast, and the Obama administration come in and say, you can't do that, you can't do something else. There was certainly talk early on about taking ships out there and have them suck up the water, take the oil out, and then put the remaining water back in. But the EPA wouldn't let them do that because there'd be a little oil in the water they were putting back, so they wouldn't try to take any of the oil out. And none of these things really made sense. Other countries were there who have had experience handling these types of major oil spills, and everything seemed to be done to block doing the things that were effective. I mean, you working in this field, you must have had a sense of frustration as you heard about all the barriers that were put in the way of doing what seemed to be logical.
Yeah, I think the oil industry is so tied in with the government that they can tell them what to do. They get such a huge tax income from the oil industry, and there's so many politicians tied up in the oil industry that they really police the state almost like a Nazi state as far as treating us, the public, is concerned, and hide the information from us. So I guess that should change so we can become aware of what is happening and get other people in and get international help. Now, what I'm surprised that maybe it is happening is, where's Chevron, where's Shell, where are all the other companies? Are they helping? Are they standing by? Because their industry is at risk as well. The whole world's oil industry is at risk if they don't do something about solving the problem. Seems to be a debate ongoing, which is not helping. It's a solution that we're looking for. Nobody's advocating a solution. The drilling wells, the directional wells, are a waste of time. They need to put in other wells to depressurize the zone.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these parallel wells that they're going to try to find the needle in the haystack to try to get to hit this drilling, take these new wells that they're putting in and drill into the old well. I mean, that seems to be like a very difficult way to do it, but I'm sure they have the technology. But what happens, of course, if they actually are able to hit this other well, the original well, and they start putting their drilling mud in there? The whole idea is they're going to put the drilling mud in, and then they're going to pump cement in behind it. Will this work? Is there any way to know whether it's going to work? Doesn't it depend upon the what's happened to the lower segment of the well? If that's blown out, will this whole thing be doomed to failure from the very beginning?
You summarize it there. I actually don't need to say anything. You're quite right there, Dr. Stan. The whole thing is doomed to failure from the start. When you've blown out the well, and they've blown out the formation, they've damaged the cement and the cement between the casing and the formation. They put in an extra two liners according to the BP engineer, and that didn't help either. So they've put in extra layers of casing that weren't part of the original design, which should have helped the situation, but it's obviously done so badly because the situation was already a destroyed well with blown out formation and ballooned sides. In other words, when you're drilling and the formations are very soft, you wear the sides away like a high pressure jet, and so the sides are being enlarged to a much greater degree. So when they put the casing down, you had these big voids, big caverns along the casing that could not possibly be filled with any cement that they put down. They just wasn't the volume that they could pour down, and with the many horizons that they went through, when they got kicks on the way down, we would see all this information on the mud log. We would see it probably, the e-log that is done at the end shows you a three-dimensional image of the well, so you can see exactly where the horizons are ballooned out. All this information is available in detail. If we could see the situation, people and other engineers could come in and make comments, but again, all the information is being hidden unnecessarily from us. We're trying to find a solution. We're not trying to delay the whole thing so everybody can make money and you know, do their own, have their own political ends.
Well, I think this is going to be a financial disaster for British Petroleum. I don't think I really wonder if they're going to be able to survive this. Certainly, I believe that the Obama administration has a political agenda, and they have always wanted to stop offshore oil drilling. They want to get the cap and trade and the Kyoto Protocol ratified by the Senate. Whether they'll go along with it, I don't know. But I think the Obama administration has certainly a political agenda. I don't see how this can be anything but a disaster for British Petroleum. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, British Petroleum is going to be really hammered for this for eternity, along with Anadarko, the other company, owning 25%, and Mitsui, 10% of as well. So there are three companies, along with Transocean and Halliburton, which are responsible. So five big players. There are probably a lot more that I haven't mentioned that are going to be responsible for this mess for eternity. It's going to affect their results unless they've got good legal guys to help them out of the situation. I'm sure they have got good legal guys that are eventually going to go for some final settlement, but it's going to affect the people and their livelihoods for almost a couple of generations, and it's not great.
And I think it's going to be a tragic situation. It's a beautiful area down there along the coast, down the bayous there of Louisiana, and all of this is going to change. And where do the environmentalists think about the alligators down there? I mean, where is the outcry from the environmentalists? We'll be right back in just a moment with Chris Landau to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Chris, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. So what is the message you would like to leave to our listeners? Remember, now this is a new audience.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, I was horrified when I saw the plight of the people in Haiti after the earthquake, but a similar event could happen right here in the United States, and that's why you should call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and purchase a supply of his products. Freeze-drying is a great way to preserve food. I know because I bought a supply 40 years ago, and when I opened a can recently, the food was as fresh and tasty as when I purchased it. We're living in uncertain times, so if you'd like to have a supply of ground beef, diced beef, chicken, vegetables, or fruit on hand, call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and mention you heard about him right here at Radio Liberty.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
On this that has a lot of fascinating information. You won't want to miss our program on Friday evening. Tomorrow evening, we're going to have Jonathan Gray from Australia, and we're going to be talking about Jonathan has some of the most amazing information you've ever heard. He's recently been on Coast to Coast. Turn that off. There we go. He's been on Coast to Coast. But we've seen his material before. We've been trying to find out how to get hold of Jonathan Gray. He has made some of the most amazing archaeological discoveries. And, of course, he was very closely affiliated with Ron Wyatt, who's certainly one of our favorite guests. And if you've never heard the four tapes that we have of the interviews with Ron Wyatt and the people who work with him about what they did, and, of course, they think it's in a four tape set called Noah's Ark, Where's Noah's Ark, but you can call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for the interviews with Ron Wyatt. They can look that up for you. And certainly Ron's passed away. But of course, Jonathan is here. He knew Ron, and he knows a lot of the things that Ron discovered but could not put out because, of course, the political situation over in Israel. Some of the most important archaeological discoveries of all time. And, Chris, I feel privileged to be privy to some of this information. Most of it we can put out. We can't put all of it out because it could have tremendous political and, of course, spiritual implications, which you won't want to miss. Jonathan Gray, who will be with us tomorrow evening. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. And I know many of you are having financial problems and not in a position to help. And if you're not, why, of course, we ask you simply to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we really are on the front lines of a very dangerous battle. People on the other side have no respect for human life. They've killed hundreds of millions of people in their quest for a one-world government. And a one-world religion. And, of course, they created the First World War and the Second World War, and, of course, the Russian Revolution, and Chairman Mao's takeover of China, and he killed probably, somewhere between 80 and 120 million people. And, in fact, you've never even heard of the Great Hunger from 58 to 62, when the communist government under Chairman Mao starved to death between 40 and 44 million Chinese. You never heard about that. They're never going to mention that in the controlled media. But, of course, you can look it up on the Internet under the Great Hunger. They usually use the figure 30 million, but, of course, according to Stephen Mosier, who knew these Chinese officials who actually checked the figures, it was between 40 and 44 million people died of starvation between 58 and 62, and not a word in the controlled media here in the United States, because I got involved in this battle in 62, and I'd never heard of this until recently. So there's so much information you're not getting out. Our media is controlled, certainly the great corporations are controlled, the banking industry is controlled. It's all controlled through the Trilateral Commission. If you'd like to get our DVD on the Trilateral Commission, while we have it available, and we have, of course, the DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, taking you into the secret societies that were here when America was founded as a sovereign nation back in 1776. But certainly we hope that you want to get the three DVD set or just get one of the DVDs. I think you'll like them enough to want to get the rest of them. I certainly want to get the DVD set, The Final Countdown. There's 10 of those, and it goes into the prophecies that are being fulfilled this very day. So again, our number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. We ask you to pray for our country. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.
The prairie, to the ocean, why You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
So it is 7 July 2010. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for caring about your world, wanting to learn more each day. That's right. It's all about learning. It's all about knowledge. It's all about the truth. And that's been the hard part for a lot of us, is because we were raised on a steady diet of lies, manipulation, fraud, and injustice. Well, there's still a lot of the injustice out there, but we are attempting every day to undo the damage that has been done. Yesterday we had a program talking about the flotilla going into Gaza Strip with a gentleman who was on board the ship, former Marine. Some of you didn't like it. Some of you did. The majority of you did. It was amazing the difference between the emails of people that listen to this program. But you know what? That's wonderful, because it's all about the truth. And we will finally get to the point where we understand the truth. This is not where we attempt to try to manipulate you into believing anything at all. You have the right to turn that radio show off now and listen to something like Imus in the Morning if you want to. You have the right to turn on sports. You don't have to listen to this program. The beauty is, there are a lot of people who do, and you will be rewarded today. In the second and third hour, we are going to have a program I have been looking forward to for a long time. Dave Champion is going to join us, Shattering the Myths of Income Tax. He challenges anyone to prove him wrong. This is going to be one of the most probably interesting programs you've ever heard, from the standpoint of trying to go back and look at what the income tax was meant to be, and most of all, who must pay income tax. He says some very challenging things as far as taxation is concerned, and he starts off with the basics in his book. He has written a book called Shattering the Myths of Income Tax. And he challenges anyone. He wants you to get this to your IRS agent. He wants you to get this to your attorney. And you know what? We're going to challenge anyone who can disagree with anything that he says to go to the front of the line today on the Power Hour. The second hour is going to be setting the stage, undoing and shattering some of these myths. The third hour will be your questions. So you want to get your questions ready, and we're going to take new listeners first. We've had a lot of old listeners that we honor and thank so much for being there for such a long time that have called in before on IRS issues. But today, we are going to let the newer listeners challenge him. And especially if you're an attorney, a judge, an IRS agent, we want you to prove him wrong. That is, if you can. In fact, I am hoping that someone can. Because if what he says is true, it will rock your world. Enough said. What we're going to talk about today, though, in this first hour, in the Riley Report, is going to be the immigration lawsuit. Yep. The feds filed a lawsuit against Arizona. The feds, as I understand it, filed a lawsuit against Arizona for supporting a law that the feds said that you should do in the first place. Kind of gives you that head-spinning kind of feeling, doesn't it? Queen Elizabeth visited New York City yesterday. Where was the President of the United States? I think this is a bigger story, and I've heard no one address it. Where was the President? Since when does a head of state go to another country and there's no head of state to meet them? WikiLeaks. Remember the sergeant? We've got more news on that sergeant who leaked to WikiLeaks a very damaging video. And the Power Hour's got a Twitter page.